the result of some last-minute changes to my schedule, I found myself in the unusual position of sitting as a student in my own Bible class last Sunday night and listening as Scott Barker got stuck with the unenviable assignment of summarizing in one class the entire life of Abraham. Sorry, Scott. As I sat and listened to his summary, I was reminded that the story of Abraham is really not Abraham's story, at least not in the way that we would typically think of a biography of a person's life. It is about Abraham, at least from one angle. Primarily, the story is about the birth of Abraham's child, Isaac. Join me in Genesis chapter 12. I want you to think with me about that. You may recognize that Genesis 12, where Abraham's story really begins, contains those important promises that God made to Abraham. Chief among them, in verse 3, that in him all families of the earth would be blessed, right? We know that's pointing to Jesus. That's the big one. But of course, at that point in Abraham's life, all these wonderful promises about his future and what his lineage would do, all of that was facing an obstacle. Abraham had no heir. He didn't have a child. And he was old. And so really, if you follow his story, primarily, it's the story of this child's birth. There are a few tangents periodically, but they're not pursued far. The main point is the coming of Isaac into the world. Look ahead into chapter 15. In verse 1, God says, "Do not fear, Abram. I am a shield to you. Your reward shall be very great." But those wonderful words are met with pushback from Abram. He says, "O Lord," verse 2, "what will you give me, since I am childless? And the heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus." Do you see what he's saying? Look at verse 3. "Since you have given me no offspring to me, one born in my house is to be my heir. I don't have an heir, God. And so what am I to make of all these promises you're talking about?" And so in verse 4, God weighs in and he said, "This man will not be your heir, but one who will come forth from your own body shall be your heir." And so God now has narrowed the promise, hasn't he? It isn't just that Abraham will have a child, but this child will come from him. And then in Genesis 16, if you keep going, as more time passes and the possibility of that happening seems to grow more impossible, Abraham and Sarah decide, "We can help God do this." And so they give Abram Hagar, Sarah's handmaid, and what they do is they just make a big mess, right? That God has to help them clean up. And so in chapter 17, God makes very clear, look down at verse 16, that it would be Abraham by Sarah that he would have this child. And so he narrows the promise a little bit more, doesn't he? Abraham and Sarah would have the child. And in verse 21, he does more than that. He says, "at this time next year." So he's not only identified mom and dad, but he's also identified when. And then if you go to chapter 18, again, God repeats the promise. Abraham and Sarah are going to have a child. And when Sarah hears that, remember her response by the time we get to chapter 18? She laughs. And don't get all judgy on Sarah. She's old. Her brain is thinking, come on. That opportunity has passed. That window is closed. To which God responds to her in verse 14. Is anything too difficult for the Lord? Finally, in chapter 21, the promise is fulfilled. Watch this. Verse 1. Then the Lord took note of Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah as he had promised. So Sarah conceived and bore a son to Abraham in his old age at the appointed time of which God had spoken to him. You see how Moses just maps that out for us, that God did exactly what he said he was going to do. All the promises were fulfilled, just as God had said, which is a setup for chapter 22. Will you go there now? And verse 2. God says to Abraham, take your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I will tell you. How could that be the plan? After all of the drama, this long story of the child coming into the world, the child, the only one that can be the fulfillment in the air, God says to Abraham, now take him and offer him as a sacrifice. But I wonder, as we get to that point in the story, if it's beginning to ring familiar. A child conceived under impossible circumstances. A child anticipated, because he is key to the Bible story. A birth story loaded with all kinds of drama and even danger. And then, after the child finally comes into the world, the beloved child, the only child, is sent to be offered as a sacrifice. It's Jesus' story. In fact, I think as you go on in Genesis chapter 22, Moses makes the connection obvious. Verse number 7, Abraham and Isaac are walking to the place for the sacrifice, and Isaac is pointing out to his dad, you know, we've got the fire, we've got the wood, we don't have anything to offer, Dad. We don't have a lamb. And then there are those words of Abraham to his son in verse 8. God will provide for himself the lamb. It's the story of the Bible. And there's this beautiful connection there to John 1 and verse 29, when John the Baptist sees Jesus and says, behold the Lamb of God. God has provided for himself the lamb. And interesting, chapter 22 in Genesis does not close before in verse 18, there is a renewal of the promise, in you all families of the earth will be blessed. Which brings us to the table. We come this morning to share the meal, to grieve the death of God's Son, his only Son, whom he loved. And to celebrate the climactic moment of the Bible story, when God provided the Lamb.